What's up, y'all? This is Rommel Watley, and welcome to Truckin' Hustle, the podcast for truckin' entrepreneurs. If you want to learn about the trucking industry from the business side of things, you're in the right place. Every week, I interview the people who are making it happen on a daily basis. I get them to share their successes, their failures, and sometimes even their secrets. The goal is to show you how you too can create financial freedom in the booming trucking industry. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
That 20 years I did was working on myself. Working on my personal self-development. I like to tell people that they say, man, you've been home 5 years and you own a home, you drive a nice car, you got your businesses and all of this stuff. And I say, no, it wasn't 5 years. It was 25 years.
Right.
Because that 20 that I used working on me was the only reason why I have been able to come home and see any type of success, because I took the time to work on me.
Turn my mic up.
Where you?
Take there. On the road to the riches, life takes a toll like bridges. Good friends become foes and snitches. Better watch your nose in your business. Hustle fam, we are back with another amazing episode. And I have a very special guest in the building with me, my brother Ed Hennings. What's up, my brother?
Man, it's all good, man. Glad to be here, man. It's an honor.
No doubt. GT Go Time Trucking.
No doubt.
Let's go. All right, so listen, we're going to talk about a very popular topic today. Everybody loves the last mile space. Everybody wants to get box trucks. Everybody wants to get in the last mile delivery. And Ed's the man. So, you know, and he has a very, very dope and interesting story. So we're going to get into all that. First of all, Ed, welcome to Truckin' Hustle, man.
Man, like I said, it's an honor to be here, man. Some of the names in this community, in this business, man. And it's good to network and finally get a chance to meet you guys.
For sure. For sure. All right. So we always like to start from the beginning. Right. Let's, you know, kind of introduce yourself. Let the Hustle fam know where you're from, man. Talk about it.
Okay, I'm Ed Hennings, and I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I've been in the trucking game for about the last 4+ years now, going on 5, and it started out, man. I was a guy from the urban community, made some bad decisions, made some choices that landed me, you know, in another community.
Okay,
you know, and I was there for 20 years, and so I took barber and cosmetology while I was in there, and my dream was to get out and own my own barber and beauty salon, right? So I actually accomplished that within a year of being home. I came home October 18, 2016. And a year later, I accomplished that. I opened that barbershop and that beauty salon. And the funny thing about our plans and our dreams is, like, we have one thing in our mind, but the universe, the higher power, has something else. So as I was working maybe 4 months into that new business that I opened up, a client sat in my chair. And he was telling me about the trucking business. And I was like, wow, man. He was telling me about the deliveries he was doing with Amazon and all of the other companies. And I was like, I think I got in the wrong business, man.
Right.
So I went out and bought me a truck, man. I'm talking about 2 days later, 2-3 days later, I found me a truck. And this was 4 or 5 years ago. So the truck, box trucks, was a lot cheaper than they are now.
Okay.
So I think I paid $7,500 for this truck.
Okay.
And man, it wasn't the prettiest truck or nothing like that. But immediately the transition from my old life into that life was very similar, because the money was coming so fast.
Mm.
And it was like, wow, you know, first time I went, I tried to get an Amazon, but I had an F on my report card. I had a felony. So I couldn't get in that lane. So what happened is I was looking through all the sites for different jobs and different ways to get loads. And it was the load board. But then there was last mile furniture delivery.
Mm.
So I called my cousin up, man. And I said, man, you want to jump on this truck with me, man? I'll pay you X amount of dollars every day. Let's get it.
Stop right there. Perfect. So we just now pretty much summed up the last 4 years, right? But we're not going to go that fast with the story,
okay,
right?
Okay.
I'm going to slow you down and we're going to bring it back real quick.
All right.
Because we can't skip the fact that you spent 20 years in another community, as you said it, right? Mm-hmm. So let's go back, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. How was that when you were growing up? Because I don't really know much about Milwaukee, man. Okay. Like, when I think of Milwaukee, like, the first thing that comes to my mind is, like, a buck.
Right.
So tell me about Milwaukee, man.
It's a typical urban, when you're in the urban community, it's typical to any urban community in America. You know, people that's not doing too well for themselves, people that's trying to make a fast buck, trying to make it happen, man. And it's very, I've been around this country a lot lately, and it's very similar to a lot of other urban communities where, once again, the common thread is poverty, and it's no different.
Got
that's,
you.
That's how it is.
How were you as a kid? What type of kid were you?
As a kid, you know, I was a good kid, but I wrestled with, making the right decision on a lot of occasions because it was available. It was an option.
Okay.
You know, go to school, get good grades, and do all that stuff, which I did. But I also had a little eye for what the fellas was doing over here. You know, like, man, this look kind of good.
Right.
I might want to, you know, a piece of the action.
Okay.
But I never did as a youngster. But when I got 18, 19 years old, you know, I felt I was a grown man. I could make my own decisions. And, you know, my granddad was very influential in my life growing up. And he ended up passing away my senior year of high school. Mm. So that voice of reason that I had growing up was gone. So now I felt like all the other adults in my life didn't have any knowledge of what I was going through or the thoughts I was having.
Okay.
So I started making them decisions on my own. Like, you know what? Y'all don't know what y'all talking about. So I got to handle this.
Gotcha. Where were your parents?
My parents were there.
They were there. They were there. Okay.
Yeah, they were
but
there.
He was more sort of the main voice of reason that would keep you out of trouble.
The main voice.
Okay. Okay.
Powerful.
Got you. Yeah. So you got into the streets and it ended up landing you in prison for 20 years.
Landed me in prison.
Tell me about that experience, man. I mean, when you were sentenced to 20 years in prison, what emotions went through your mind?
Well, actually, I was facing life in prison.
Okay.
So I went to trial. Facing life, and the jury found me guilty of a lesser offense.
Okay.
And I got sentenced to 40 years in prison.
Okay.
And I spent 20 of the 40. I did half the time.
Okay.
But that 20 years I did was working on myself, working on my personal self-development. I like to tell people that. They say, man, you've been home 5 years, and you own a home, you drive a nice car, you got your businesses, and all of this stuff. And I say, no, it wasn't 5 years. It was 25 years.
Right.
Because that 20 that I used working on me was the only reason why I have been able to come home and see any type of success, because I took the time to work on me.
When did you start working on yourself?
Immediately. The first day. As soon as they put the handcuffs on me, I knew it was time to make some changes.
Really?
Immediately.
What was the catalyst for that? Because, I mean, I would assume that you were so caught up in prior street life, right?
Yes, sir.
And then you get the handcuffs caught beside. How do you know immediately, like, yo, you know what? I got to change my life. Because, and then you're facing 40 years?
I'm facing life.
Life, rather. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you at that point, it's like you're not even getting out. So why are you thinking about working on yourself? Like, I'm trying to understand, like,
yes, because
your mindset at that time.
Okay, my mindset was this. It wasn't about the circumstances. It was about the person that I wanted to be. And so many times, to answer that question, so many times during my 20 years in there, I was trying to help guys be better so that they can go home. I was saying, man, you got to make these changes so you don't come back in here.
Right.
They might have less time than me. They might have 1 year, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years. But they saying, well, what about you? I'm like, don't worry about me.
Right.
This is about you, and I'm going to take some solace in seeing you not come back, because I may not never get out.
Mm.
But it's not about me. It's not about my situation. I'm not doing this based upon you're not going to get out early because you're doing these good things. Well, it's not about me getting out early.
Right.
Because if I'm only doing it just because I'm going to get out early, then it's not going to last anyway.
Right. So it's almost like you were trying to live like vicariously through them. Like,
without a doubt.
If you could see them free, that was like a piece of freedom for you.
Without a doubt. Hands down.
I love that. So what did you do to work for yourself? What were the work on yourself? What were the tangible things that you did?
Okay. It's very funny. First of all, reading books, you know, in there you got a lot of time.
Right.
So you're going to read books. But then to apply what you're reading, a lot of people say, well, when I get out, I'm going to do this. I'm like, no, I'm going to apply this right here. For the simple fact, I might say, all right, I get up at 7 o'clock every morning, but I need to get up at 6. So now I'm working my way from 7 to 6:30 to 6:30 to 6 because this is something I'm working on with myself because I know I got to start getting up a little earlier to work out, to do this, to get to work, you know, get to the barbershop because I was the barber in there.
Okay.
So I had start structuring my life a little better.
Yeah.
You know, I started cleaning up my room every day, my cell every day, even when my cellmate didn't get up. I got up every morning and cleaned up the cell, and people would say, well, you clean up the cell every morning, Ed. Why your cellmate don't get up? I'd be like, it's not about him. It's me establishing my work ethic. I need to raise my game up. He ain't raising his game up.
Right.
And if we met right now, he probably, his work ethic probably wasn't up for him to get out and make nothing happen because he spent his whole time laying in the bed.
Mm.
So I spent my time building these type of things within myself. I took pictures and articles of people that overcame the odds. Like I would read stories about somebody that was facing insurmountable odds. The deck was totally stacked against them. I would rip that out the magazine or out the book and put it on my wall. And these became my new homies. These became my new friends. They say surround yourself around people that's going where you want to go. So that's what I did. All these people that overcame the odds, they was on my wall.
Who are some of those people?
And it didn't even have to be famous people, but okay. Nelson Mandela is one famous one
Okay. Because
I related so much to him coming out of prison,
right?
You know, and becoming president. It was a young lady. She was 15 years old and her mother passed. She was a single parent and she had four siblings. And the four siblings was younger than her, so she was the oldest. But fast forward her story, she had a law firm. She had went to school. Graduated from law school, started her own law firm. Two of her siblings was working in that law firm. And the youngest two was in law school.
Mm.
And I said, if a 15-year-old girl can raise four siblings, start her own law firm, and have those siblings on their way to contributing to that law firm, I said, man, that's how I want my story to end.
Right, right.
I want my story to end.
And she
like
deserves
that.
A place on the wall.
Man, the wall of fame for real.
No doubt. So how did you find these stories? How did you find these books? Like, were you just like in the library? Like, where were you? Was somebody giving you this information?
Yeah, you got the library. People order magazines. You might get a Jet magazine with an article. You might get
Jet magazine. Boy.
Yeah, man. You know, you might get out. You know, this is the 90s, man.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, I'm ripping them articles right up out of there and I'm putting them on my wall and I'm sharing them with people. Like, look at this. People, you know, in their mind, they say, I can't do it, man. It's too much.
Right.
But look at this. Look what he just did. So that became part of my DNA.
Okay.
So when I'm talking to the fellas, I know I have to come home and make something happen because if I do it, they're going to believe in themselves.
Yeah.
If I don't do it, they like, man, Ed was talking all that positive stuff. He got out and didn't do nothing, man. See, he can't do it. I can't do it neither.
Yeah.
So it just all became organically intertwined into my purpose is just to be able to do that.
Did you always have that positive mindset or is that a shift that you made as soon as you became incarcerated?
I would like to say, early on in my life, I was positive like that. Then I lost it. You know, the streets took it away from me. A lot of the influence and a lot of the voices, the narrators, some people call it, in your ear all the time, is it gets stronger. They say whatever beast you feed gets stronger. So I fed that beast of negativity so much, you know, that it kind of drowned out the positive in my life until I went to prison and it kind of woke me up.
Got you. How long did it take you to become a barber in prison?
2 years.
So 2 years. So you actually went to school for barbering in prison, and then you became like the barber. So you was the guy.
Yeah.
So you said you had to get up and go to the barber shop. So tell me, what's the setup? I've never been to prison before.
Okay,
so
okay,
how does a barber shop look in prison?
Man, the barber shop is a little small room, man, with a couple barber chairs in there. You know, they got all the equipment. And the guys come in, get a haircut. It makes their day. You know,
they talk a lot of junk, like the regular barbershop.
Yes, sir. All day. It's one of those things.
All right, guys. Truck and Hustle has now partnered with Transpo CFO, powered by Venning. Transpo CFO offers a streamlined monthly subscription for businesses to consolidate their accounting, payroll, and tax needs into one flat monthly rate, saving businesses a tremendous amount of time and money while making their financial operations much smoother for the long road ahead. Check out Transpo CFO in the description below and tell them Truck and Hustle sent you. Now, let's get back to the show.
Things where... you deprived of everything, But that barbershop experience for a lot of guys walking out of there with the crispy lining, haircut and nice, it make their day.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't have a visit coming. They may not have a visit coming. They may not see anybody from the outside world. But just to walk back to their cell with a fresh haircut, you know, it works wonders for the morale of a person.
Got you. So overall, like, what would you say? I mean, because, like, I mean, it's prison is prison. What was your overall experience during that time? Like, just being there. I mean, obviously, we know you're incarcerated, so it's not a good thing.
No doubt.
But it seems like you made the best of it.
Yeah.
Right. So would that be fair to say, like, you were able to make the best of your time to where it wasn't as bad as maybe some people's experiences may have been?
Definitely. Like I said, the mindset of a person that is defeated and really have no hope. You sit up there and you look and you observe and you like, man, I didn't even know this existed. So I was introduced to people that really didn't care about living or dying. And the pain was so deep for me that I never wanted anybody to experience that. I said, man, I don't want anybody ever to send themselves as well as their family and anybody else's family through this pain. So once again, it became part of my purpose just to be like, man, I got to try to help somebody not go through this.
Right.
You know, because it can be done.
Right.
It's not for everybody, but I felt like it's been my purpose. It's just to show people like, man, whatever you're going through, not even just prison, because it transcends that. There's people that's going through something right now, whether it's a relationship, whether they not living up to their full potential or whatever it is in life. It's like, man, look, not only am I going to tell you about this, but I'm going to live this so you can see how it look. I'm going to model this.
Yeah. How far along were you in your sentence when you learned that you'd be getting that sentence, that life sentence reduced?
Okay, I went to trial and the jury found me guilty of a lesser offense. So I was sentenced already to 40 years.
Okay.
So about, I seen parole year 10. So for the next 10 years, I was going back and forth to the parole board. So it was like going to prison all over again. Each time they denied you because your parents on the phone, your loved ones asking you, you know, what happened?
Right.
And you got to tell them, well, they told me to wait another year.
So you have that glimmer of hope.
So every time it's
you're getting let down every
getting
time.
Getting let down.
I know
you
that's
You got to fight through it. You got to fight.
Okay. Yeah. So how many times did that happen for you?
That happened about 8-9 times.
8-9 times. Yeah. Wow. But you just keep on.
You have to tell yourself once again, you know what? This is for a higher purpose. This is, you know what? If I did 10 years, you know, I would tell myself things like this. If I did 10 years, would I have the impact if I did 15?
Right.
Would I have the impact at 15 that I would have at 20? You know, so I would tell myself things like this, like, yeah, God got me doing this because I got a bigger purpose.
Gotcha.
You know?
Gotcha. Okay. So the 9th time when you get that news that is going to be reduced and you're going to serve less time, what are your emotions at that point?
Man, you know, you can't even describe it because you're preparing for this whole 19 years because it was year 19 when then they finally sent me the work release.
So last year. It was year 19 and then you're going to be getting out the next year.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. Tell me about that.
So when that came and it was like, I'm telling you, man, I'm finna come down and go to work release, man. Yeah. I got a job at a barbershop. That was the ironic thing. And the great thing about my situation is that all those years of cutting hair in there, they allowed me to get a job at a barbershop while I was on work release.
Right. Okay.
So I would go cut hair in the barbershop and that helped my transition out. Because I was able to mix and mingle with the guys in the barbershop and see things that most people would not see coming out of prison.
Right.
So that decision I made in 1998 to take that barber and cosmetology course, it opened up the door in 2015 for me to work in the barbershop.
Yep.
And once again, that feeling right there, I felt like, all right, this is it.
Right.
When he gave me that job in the barbershop, I said, this is the opportunity that I've been working so hard for.
Yeah.
And I'm going to kill it.
Right. All the dreams have manifested
there
at that time. It's like, here we are. We've arrived.
That's it.
But,
showtime.
But you heard about these box trucks one day, right?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
So 20 years of preparing to be a barber.
You heard about these trucks. Now it's going, you have to start all over again with something else.
Man, from ground zero.
All right. So let's get into that. You said a friend of yours was the one who said?
A client. He came to get a haircut.
He's getting his haircut and he owned box trucks.
And he owned one box truck.
One box truck. And what was he doing?
He was doing deliveries for Amazon.
Okay. Okay, cool. So he told you about it. I'm sure he probably told you how much he's making, how much money he said he's making.
Right.
How much did he say he's making a week?
He was making, he was just talking about every night. He was like, man, I delivered last night. I made like 400 and some bucks. I was like, you made 400 bucks last night? He's like, yeah, man, I was on the road for like 3 hours. I was like, 3 hours? So I'm doing the math, you know, I'm counting on my fingers and everything. And I'm like, I got to get in this game. This don't add up.
Right.
So I did my research, you know, I'm a Google maniac. Okay. I'll get on Google that night and I'm Googling trucking and I'm like, oh, it's for real. This is serious money.
Yeah.
And I went out and got that truck, man.
Okay.
I had to get in the game.
So I'm sure you had money saved up from barbering, right? That's probably how did you buy your first truck outright cash or did you just put, how'd you buy your first truck?
Cash money, man. $7,500. I went up to a rural area in Wisconsin, found me a box truck. You know, I looked on Craigslist. I looked on what's that place? Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah.
I was looking all over for a truck.
Okay.
And I found one, you know, I was just bouncing stuff off of him during that day. Like, man, what size truck? How I gotta look? What is all this? I never drove a truck in my life.
Right.
We went up there, I gave him the money, and he was like, you want me to drive it back for you? I said, no, I'm gonna drive it. And I've been driving them ever since, man. And
okay.
I never been behind the wheel of nothing that big before.
Got you. So this is a non-CDL box truck?
Yes, sir.
What type of truck was it that you bought the first one?
GMC.
GMC truck.
Yeah, GMC.
Okay. So you get the truck, and now you have to find work. So
now
what do you do?
I have to find work. I go on the sites. Once again, I'm Googling stuff like this, that. So I found Amazon through him. Amazon told me they couldn't work with me because I was a felon.
Okay.
So, you know, I get back on the sites, and I see Final Mile Furniture Delivery, two-man team.
Okay.
I'm like, two-man team. And then I seen the base pay, which was like $750.
Okay.
It was like $750 a day minimum.
Okay. So this is like a want ad or something like that.
They're looking this is like on Indeed.
They're looking for like contractors?
Yeah, they're looking for owner-operators.
Got you. Owner-operators on Indeed. Okay, got you.
So the owner-operator thing popped up. I called them up. I said, man, I want in. I got a truck. I'm ready to go. I got a crew. Me and my cousin, and we jumped out there, man, and it was crazy because it was per stop. You was getting paid per stop. So it'd be like, oh, you got to go from Milwaukee to Madison, Wisconsin. So in Madison, you was in that zone. So in that zone, it paid $55, $57, $51 a stop, roughly.
Okay.
So if I go to Madison with 18, 19, 20 stops at $50, $55 a stop, like, ooh, okay.
Right.
So I pay my helper his money. Gas probably like $100. So it was like, bam. So you go to Green Bay, that's $115 a stop. So I go to Green Bay, with 17 stops at $115 a stop. I'm paying my helper double. Like, man, he go $200, $250 for today.
Right.
Man, he ready to go.
Okay. So let's start back at the beginning of that. When you establish that relationship with the furniture delivery company, what do you have to do? What are the requirements for you to work with them? Are they paying you as a contractor? Did you have to have a business? Like, what are they looking for from you to get signed on with them? Is pretty much what I'm saying.
Yes. They're making sure you have a 26-foot box truck. That's the first thing. A lot of people in this game, they require a lift gate. Some don't. Unfortunately for me, I didn't have a lift gate my first truck. I had to grab it and just pick it up.
Right.
But you soon learn over time. They also want you to have, you know, your DOT, your MC number. What else is it? Your straps. You know, you gotta be able to strap the freight down like anytime, anything else you need. Pallet jack.
Okay.
Things like that. But
is this stuff that they're providing for you, or did you have to go out and grab this stuff yourself?
No, you have to have all your equipment yourself.
So they want you to get a pallet jack?
Yeah.
I mean, a pallet jack's not cheap. And you got to get your straps, obviously, everything to tie everything down. So you have to come to them with all that.
Yeah, you got to come to them with all your equipment.
Is there any type of like onboarding process or anything? Are they looking at to make sure that you have everything in place, or are they just like taking you at your word? How does that kind of work?
Oh, no, definitely onboarding. Some of these companies have an extensive background check.
Okay.
Some companies don't. It just depends on who you're signing on with. Sometimes you can show up Monday morning and be working Monday afternoon.
Okay.
And then sometimes, you know, the background check and all of the other checks and balances they have to do might take a week.
Okay.
You know, it's just going to vary from each individual company or supplier that you're carrying for.
So you're signing up with them as an independent contractor?
Yes, sir.
Okay, got you. All right. So, and this is like, okay, so the first furniture company, can you say who it was?
It was a logistics company, but it was for IKEA.
Okay, got you. So they were like a broker for IKEA.
Yes.
Okay, got you. All right. So I'm just trying to make sure I understand the whole relationship. So are you running through the broker or are you running like under your own? Like how does like the insurance and everything work if you damage the furniture? So just explain that. So you have to get like a certain amount of insurance coverage and all that?
Yes. You got to have $1 million of liability and 100,000 cargo insurance. So that's like standard.
Okay.
For anybody that's doing furniture delivery, final mile, white glove, all of those things, you have to have $1 million of one and 100,000 of the other, cargo and liability.
Okay. All right. Got you. So they check that. They make sure you have all that in place. Mm-hmm. And then how do you get the actual trips? Like, how do you get the work? Like, is there a dispatcher? Mm-hmm. Is there a load board? Like, can you explain that
a little bit? It'll be a part of a warehouse operation. So the warehouse, you'll pull into the dock every morning and they'll have your routes already mapped out for you for the day.
So they're saying show up at 6 o'clock every morning.
They have your freight ready, all lined up in the dock. You just put it on the truck.
Okay.
And you can take off.
So this freight is all accounted for. Do you have to like double check it or like?
Most definitely. Because if you are not checking your freight and you put everything on your truck and you sign off on something that's not on your truck.
Right.
You signed off on it.
Got you.
So therefore, you're responsible. You liable for that freight.
How many other contractors like yourself are they usually? That's usually there doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's quite a bit. It depends on the size of the company. Like if you're dealing with somebody like IKEA, it's maybe two or three other contractors out there.
Okay. Okay. Got you. So you guys are all there getting loaded in the morning.
Yes.
You're counting the pieces that you're putting on the truck. Do they like after you leave? Mm-hmm. Are they like? What's kind of like the process? Like how much stops are they giving you like typically on a regular day?
Yeah, typically on a regular day, anywhere from 12. Nowadays, 12 to 16, 17 stops, anywhere in that range.
OK.
And a lot of companies will give you a minimum rate. They say, OK, if you end up doing 4 stops, we still going to pay you $650.
Okay.
So you got a $650 minimum or $750 or $450, just depending on who it is.
So they give you a minimum regardless. So, because sometimes not as many stops. And exactly. Obviously you get paid by stop.
Yes.
So you want to get as many stops as possible.
Exactly.
But if you don't do a lot of stops, they'll still give you at least four.
At least give you at least $450 or something like that.
Okay. You said $650, right?
Yeah. Some are $650, okay. Some $750, some $450.
Okay. All right. Got you. All right. So then you go out, you start delivering each stop. So typically, in a day, how many stops could you get done?
If you're really good, I mean, you can knock out. And let me say this, assembly. If you're just dropping the freight off at each home or each business, you can get done really quick.
Okay.
But when you are doing assemblies, that's going to slow you down because you have to assemble some of these things. It's called white glove delivery.
Okay.
When you're doing white glove deliveries, there's assembly involved.
Okay.
So if you're not well versed in it, you can be in a customer's house for quite a bit of time until you learn how to do these assemblies. And that's the thing about this business is a lot of people don't want to do it. Nobody wants to lift the furniture. Nobody wants to do the assemblies. So it's always going to be work where some of these other places are a little more saturated in what they do. Mm. The final mile and the white glove is something that I've caught on to. By choice and by force. But yeah, there's a number of people that don't want to touch it.
Right. How much do you get paid for assembly?
You get paid. It's all in the same.
It's all a part of that stop.
All a part of that stop.
Because I mean, I think about it, like if you're putting together like a desk or something, you could be there all day.
Yeah, you could be there for a minute until you get really, you know, versed in it.
Right.
Then you zip, 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 and you out of there.
How long does it normally take you?
Now it doesn't take me that long, but at first I was struggling. I was struggling, right?
Right, right, right.
But it takes you about a week or two, and then you really good
you
at it.
You kind of knock it out?
Yeah, man, there's some guys, I've seen some guys throw down, man, take some doors off a refrigerator in 5 minutes and put them back on.
Wow.
You're like, man, you a beast with it. So, you know, it ain't for everybody, but yeah, it's a lane that's open for anybody that's willing to do that type of work.
So typically, how long are you at each stop?
If I'm just dropping it off.
Yeah.
5-10 minutes.
5-10 minutes, dropping it, moving along with the furniture. And you said how much you get paid, how much per stop?
It depends on what zone you're going. So if you're going a farther distance, mm-hmm. it's going to pay more.
Okay.
So if I'm going from, if I'm going 2 miles, I might only get $40 a stop.
Okay.
But if I go deliver somewhere 50 miles away, then I might get paid $70 a stop.
Okay.
So it just depends on the distance.
Okay. So you would know that beforehand, obviously.
Yes.
So you have like a route plan.
Yes.
And they let you know. Now, what about if you don't get the delivery, all the deliveries done for that day? Like, how time sensitive is this business?
Very.
Okay.
Very time sensitive, because you have people at home waiting on the stuff they have ordered and paid for.
Okay.
So if you tell them you got a window, 30-minute window, you're going to be there between 9 and 9:30. That customer sitting at home waiting, they might took some time off work.
Right.
They might, have some things to do with their children or their families. So they're taking that time out and they're waiting on it.
Right.
So you got to really be on schedule.
So if you don't get there for some reason, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, it's going to be a problem.
Could it cause you your contract or cause you that opportunity?
If you do it too much.
Yeah.
If you just constantly late, this may be not the job for you.
Got you.
You maybe need to go find another lane or something else to do. But yeah, you got to be on time with your deliveries. That's very important. And it's very important because, in the trucking business, you build relationships.
Right.
So if this dispatcher or this warehouse worker there and you always on time, you always getting it done, they going to give you the sweet. They going to give you the sweet routes. You know
no
what
doubt,
I'm saying?
No doubt. No doubt.
Like, man, he ain't never on time. We finna give him this.
Right.
We finna give him the worst route we got for the day.
No doubt. What was the biggest challenge for you getting started? Like when you first kind of got started, before you got accustomed to everything, what took the most time for you to get used to?
Finding the right and proper technique when delivering the furniture and delivering.
Go into that. What do you mean by the technique?
A lot of people, they be like, man, I'm strong. I can do it. And it's not really about strength. It's about you using your leverage. Using your body in the proper way, grabbing, like they call it a fulcrum. And that's how you at the point of something and you know how to balance it on top of there. And a lot of the freight that you picking up and carrying into people's houses is based upon how you grabbing it, how you leveraging it. Because if you just trying to do a Hercules move, you're going to wear yourself out by the end of the day.
Right.
But once you do it for a while, and if you're working with somebody that has been doing this for a while, they're going to show you like, nah, don't grab that like that, man. I know you strong, but you're not finna beat that. You're not finna defeat it. You got to know what you're doing. And once you get the proper techniques, it's nothing.
How many guys are typically on the truck with you?
Two.
And are you paying those guys or is the company?
I'm paying those guys.
Okay. So that comes out of, so how do you decide how much to pay them, out of what you're getting, and where do you find those guys?
Just like anybody else, man, word of mouth. I'm looking all over for guys all the time. But I pay them according to number 1, what I'm getting paid, and also according to their performance. Cause some people are really, really good and they deserve to be compensated.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Got you. So at the end of, on a good week, what are you kind of taking home on a regular, kind of like a regular week, five days, typically Monday through Friday?
Yeah, Monday through Friday. And some companies are 7.
Okay. 7, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, some companies are 7 days a week.
Okay. Got you. So give me like an idea of like a range of what you could make weekly.
Weekly, anywhere from 2000 to about $3,500, $4,000 in one truck.
Okay. Okay. Got you. And how much are you spending on like fuel?
Fuel, I try to keep my fuel at about 100 a day.
Do they give you any type of surcharges for fuel or anything like that?
Yeah, if it goes way above, like if you're going distance, if you're going a good ways out there, then they'll reimburse you.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So they do help you on that.
Yeah.
All right. So you said fuel is like $100 a day. All right. So
I
like,
try to keep it around.
Keep it around $100 a day.
Yeah.
So you stay under like 100 miles.
Yes.
Radius.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Got you. All right, cool. So You start with one truck and then you start growing the business. Tell me about that.
It was a learning process because, you making this money is pretty good. Then you say, I got enough money. I'm going to add to the fleet. I'm going to go buy another truck.
Right.
But buying another truck is very similar to starting all over again. I didn't see that going forward. I just was Like, oh, I'm going to get this truck and you know, it's going to be more money. But you don't know that. Number one, you're going to have extra fuel. If you don't have that money put back, you got to do two trucks of two teams now that you have to pay.
Right.
But the money from that first truck not coming in until another 2 or 3 weeks, sometimes a month. So you got to have the money put back to cover the expenses just to get that truck out there on the road.
Hold on. Is that how it works? It takes that time, that much time for them to pay you?
Yeah, in some cases. Like some people play every week.
Okay.
So you might get that in 2-3 weeks to start out.
Okay, got you.
But like if they pay first... every 2 weeks, then it might be.
So it's bi-weekly and weekly.
Yes.
But usually no longer than bi-weekly.
Yes, never any longer than
okay,
bi-weekly.
Got you. You don't ever have any issues with getting paid, right?
None.
Okay.
None at all.
All right, got you. So back to that. You said it's kind of like starting all over.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because you have new expenses and you're hiring employees now.
Yes.
Right. So how'd you handle that? Because now you have people working for you. So who was your first employee and how'd you find them?
Okay, it's really easy. Like, you know, we in the urban community in Milwaukee. And somebody's seeing you in this truck working every day.
Yeah.
And now they're starting to see the fruits of your labor. And that's catching people's eye. You like, man, what you doing with this truck? What's going on with this truck? I'm like, man, I'm finna buy another one. You want to roll? So it's very easy in the urban community because when people see some semblance of success, you know, you're going to stand out.
Right.
So just seeing that, it was easy for me to find guys that was around my way that wanted to give it a shot.
Okay.
But finding people that's going to last and stick, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, yeah. And now you're transitioning into a boss, right? You're not only working for yourself, but you're actually working for you have people working for you.
Yes.
How different was that for you? Like to have to tell guys, you know, what to do and have to have some kind of structure for them. And, you know, tell me a little bit about that. And was it difficult? Because, I mean, like you said, you're working with guys from the community.
Yeah.
They may feel like, oh, that's my man or whatever. Like, was it dealing with that whole thing?
Man, very difficult. Very difficult in the sense of I'm a person. I always feel like, you know what, man, you're not getting this right. I'll do it. Get out the way. I'll do it. And now you can't do it because you can have 100 trucks, but you're only one person. So if nobody is there manning those trucks, then you only could drive one. So you really can't expand if you're going to always be the person to say,
facts.
I'll do it.
That's a fact.
Well, you can't do all of that. So I had to learn that the hard way and you know, just finding people that's not going to be around for a short period of time and that really want to be around, it became difficult. Number two, like you said, trying to tell people how to do it, what to do, be on time, be respectful, all of these things, that was another hurdle. And it's constantly a hurdle because customer service, like you know, you have to let people know you have to treat people the way you would want to be treated.
Right.
And that's going to always be an ongoing educational process because some people just don't have that on their priority list.
Right. Did you ever have a situation where, you know, somebody did something that could have potentially impacted your business in that way? Could you speak to something like that?
Yes, most definitely. Because you're in the customer's home. So, you know, that's their home. So you really have to be courteous. And when a client calls back and say, well, your driver or your team did this and did that, you jeopardizing your business right there. And I've even had some guys where the company we was carrying for say, hey, we like your work, Ed, but him, he can't come back. So once again, establishing that relationship to where when something does go wrong, you've established a relationship where they feel comfortable coming to you instead of letting your whole fleet go or letting your truck go completely. They say, hey, we like what you do, but this guy here, he can't come. He can't come back.
Yeah,
gotcha. And you have to establish that, though, because you will get your whole company let go.
Yeah, I could imagine. So what's your methodology in terms of growing? Because you start adding more trucks. Are those trucks working for the same furniture company? Or are you starting to look for other furniture company or other opportunities? Mm-hmm. Are you strictly doing furniture? Is that kind of like your wheelhouse? Yeah. Tell me about that.
Okay, I have at times over these years dealt with 2 and 3 different companies at a time. Right now, I'm rolling with one company. Okay. I kind of like they set up. I like what they do. The guys that's driving and carrying for me, they like it. So when I like it and they like it, is a beautiful thing. But sometimes I like a contract and the guys that I got working with me, they don't like it. So that's going to show in the quality of their work. But when everybody comes together and everybody likes each other, it makes it a lot easier. So you always looking for the right fit for what you have going on with your company. And some companies like delivering refrigerators all day. Me, I'm like, man, them refrigerators, man. But a lot of guys like, man, I would rather do refrigerators all day. So you just looking for what fits your company best.
Do you have any kind of say in like what you deliver? Like, is that something that you have a say in? Or is it kind of like you just pull up and they say, here, this is what it is?
Yeah, you pretty much going to deliver what it is, because depending on the company, you might be working with a company that only have TVs.
Right.
So that's all they make is TVs. So that's all you delivering all day.
Right.
Or you might go with a company that only have refrigerators. That's all they have. So if you take that contract, you already know what you're delivering.
Got you. Have you ever thought about doing anything outside of like furniture and branching out like with other type of stuff? Or is that kind of like where you're comfortable?
I'm kind of comfortable there, but I'm always open. You know, growth is uncomfortable, so you got to come out of that comfort zone sometime.
Yeah.
And I've been looking at doing some OTR work and going over the road a lot more these days. I've touched on it a little bit over the years.
Okay.
But, yeah, I'm definitely open to giving that a shot, because it's starting to look, with the climate the way it is right now, the workforce being so small and people is not just running for jobs and stuff like that right now. Yeah, over the road might be a little something that I venture off into coming up here.
Got you. So where have you grown the business to now? Tell me what the business looks like. How many trucks you guys got? How many employees?
Okay, at the time, I've had up to 5 trucks. I recently moved from Milwaukee to Memphis. So I downsized to 3 trucks. Okay. I have 3 trucks running right now. 2-man teams on each truck, Monday through Friday. If we add weekends, then I'll add some weekend guys. But right now I have maybe 6-7 guys that run. I've also been teaching people in my community about how to get involved in this business, because you don't really need, from where I'm from, a person could take one truck and it could change their life, because it did for me. Trucking changed the game for me.
Right.
And people seen it. They watched it, watched me come out of prison and start a barbershop, and things was okay. But the trucking game took me to a whole nother level. So I found people in my community asking me so many questions about trucking. So there I was teaching this guy how to get started, this guy how to get started, this guy how to get started. So organically, I seen some guys go from poverty to doing really well for themselves.
Wow.
So not only did I grow the trucking business as in trucking, but I've also grown into teaching people how to get involved in it and how to even lift a freight. Like, man, let me show you how to do that.
How to properly lift without getting yourself hurt. Or how to use a hand truck.
So all of that is part of my teaching people how to get involved in the final mile business with one box truck and make $100,000. So I'm doing videos. I'm doing all of these type of things just to show people, like, man, I know I talk about personal self-development a lot.
Yeah.
But let me show you how to get some money in your pocket.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, that's what people are really wanting. Some
100%.
Pay some bills.
now, when you moved to Memphis, how did that impact your business? Did you find other companies out of Memphis, or did you still keep trucks in Milwaukee? Like, how did that impact what you were doing?
Yeah, first I was solely going to just go down to Memphis and just do work in Memphis, and I was still working with IKEA, but the pay wasn't as much as it was in the North. The pay had dropped. So I began to search and start looking for other companies that was looking for some box trucks.
Okay.
So I bounced around a couple companies. And like I said, the last few months here, I would say the last 2 or 3 months, I finally found the company where the pay is good. The work is nice. The routes are nice. The guys like it. I like it. So I'm building with this company.
Okay.
But I'm also still trying to keep a truck or two in Milwaukee.
Okay. When you say, what do you look for in a company? Because they have to, you know, hire you, but you also have to kind of hire them,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So what are some of the things that you're kind of looking for when you're looking at companies and saying, hey, I think this is a good company to work for work with, partner with?
Reasonable work/pay. Like, sometimes you're getting paid the same amount, more work. And it's like, I don't want to put my guys out there picking up at 7 in the morning and they doing deliveries to 9, 10 o'clock at night. and they getting paid the same amount of money as somebody that's doing deliveries, and they getting done at 2 and 3 in the afternoon. Mm. So I just want the pay to match the work.
Got you.
So if you asking me to, and me and my guys to do white glove deliveries all day, then the pay should reflect that.
Got you. And what's a decent pay rate or range that you would say if somebody was looking for this opportunity, this is where it should be. And if it's not above this, then you need to move on.
Yeah. Those 650, 750 minimums.
Okay.
Those are where you want to start.
So you want to definitely make sure the company has a minimum.
Yes. Yes.
So a lot of them don't.
Everyone I've ever carried for always have a minimum in place.
So look for that minimum. And then what about like a per stop, rate, all of that?
Okay. And most of the time it's going to be, based upon the distance in which you are delivering.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, so when you getting, like I said, you can do the math. When you're getting 15, 16 stops at $70, $50, $100 a stop, you can really see, you know, your profit. Mm. But, you know, I have carried for a company that gave me a $400 minimum. And not only that, they wasn't giving me adequate stops for me to even see any pay.
Right.
So I had to, you know, find a better fit for me and my guys. But yeah, you definitely want to stay in that 15 stop range with $50+ a stop. That way you can see your profit. Not only that, just make sure that minimum is in place. Because if the route is short there, that right. day, you can still get enough money to sustain.
Will they usually tell you that, like when they have their ads or whatever, will they say, "Hey, this is a, you know, we have a minimum. We usually do about 15 to 16 stops." Like, is all that usually included in the ad?
Yes, definitely a part of the pitch.
Okay,
yeah,
got you. What was it? I was just thinking about a question. Man, slipped my mind. What was it? Damn. It was in line with that. I was going to ask about the, I asked you about the stops. I said the minimum. I forgot. It'll come back to me.
All right.
Anyway. All right. So you said now you have, you said you three trucks, you downsized, right? Mm-hmm. Went from 5 to 3 and now you're kind of focusing on teaching, right?
Yes.
So what made you want to get into teaching?
Once again, it was just one of those organic things. Like I said, people where I'm from, they seen things happening on the trucks. They seen the fleet growing. So the questions start to come in hot and heavy. You know, I'm just doing motivation.
Right.
I'm traveling the country. I'm motivating people saying, man, I did this with my life. I've been through this and I came back from it.
Okay.
You know, and this is how you come back from the adversity.
When did you start doing that? Like traveling around, speaking and all that?
Like, man, I've been doing it for some years.
And how did you get into that?
Man, once again, I was at the barbershop that I was working at.
Okay.
And a guy was mentoring some young kids. And I was on work release. So I was going to get in the van to go back to prison. And the guy that owned the barbershop, he came and said, Ed, man, you see those young guys up there? Before you get in the van and go back, could you come over here and tell them your story? So those kids were sitting there and I came over and I told them, I said, you see that van right there? I'm finna go back to prison. And their heads popped up. Mm. And I was like, yeah, I'm in my 19th year. I haven't been home since 96, and it's 2015. And a lot of them wasn't even that old. They probably wasn't even alive.
Wow.
They was like, you've been in prison that long? So it just started growing. And even while I was in, I was participating in youth programs, Scare Straight programs, anything that would be a deterrent to stop people from coming in there. Like, I know it's tough, but you have to overcome it. You have to.
Gotcha.
You know, you don't have any options. Your only option is here. So you have to really take advantage of your time out there and don't think that it can't happen to you.
No, I love that. My question just came back. Pay increases. How often do they do pay increases? I'm sorry to jump back, but it just hit me. I knew I wanted to ask you, like, how is this a contract rate to where it's like a year or a term and then they give you an increase? How does that work? I knew I wanted to ask that too.
Yeah, and that's going to be based upon not very little increases. But what you can do, once again, once you build that relationship and they see the quality of your work, you know, it's always, you can always go to the table and be like, man, we killing it. But, you know, the money, I got to give my guys some more money. I need some raises. I need more money. And you can always talk to people. But it's nothing set in stone to where you're going to get this raise and pay. The pay scale is going to go up or anything like that. You're just going to have to perform And then if you feel that, you know, it's necessary, then, you know, go to the guys and be, hey, you know, we doing a really good job. We knocking it out. No claims, no complaints. We on time. Hey, what this look like?
Got
what
you.
It look like?
Yeah, you get what you negotiate, right?
That's right. You
know, not what you're worth.
They ain't going to call you and say, we give you more money.
We give you a raise. Yeah. Hey, man, you never know. You never know. All right, cool. So like you said, you've been speaking around the country, working with the kids. Tell me a story about somebody who you kind of brought into the business and, like, you know, it changed their life. Because you said earlier, like, you've seen people go from poverty.
Yeah.
Like, can you tell me like a in-depth story about something like that?
Okay. Let me just speak a couple of guys that work on trucks with me.
Okay.
Meet a guy. He's in bad shape, man. Home is not doing too well. You know, bills is caught up with him. And it's just not good for him. And then in 30 days, you see him get on a truck, got an apartment, got a car, all of these things that fast. And I'm watching this and I'm like, man, the trucking business was the way to go, because I watched a guy go from, even through the pandemic, I watched a guy get married. I watched a guy, the same guy, get a nice home, all of these things from the trucking business. When, before that, I wasn't seeing any of that. I wasn't seeing anybody, especially in the pandemic, because they shut my barbershop down during the pandemic.
Right.
But my guys, during the pandemic, the trucks kept rolling. They kept eating. They kept paying their bills. They kept making, you know, strides upward, you know, where a lot of individuals during the pandemic, especially in the beginning of it, was scrambling. You know, ends, you know, a lot of people found out that 3 weeks or a month or two off work, we all be in dire straits.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
So
have you ever been back to the prison system at all since you came out, like to speak or to, you know, tell me about that? Like, have you done any talks in the prison? Or?
Yeah, a lot. Okay. A lot. Okay. Up in Wisconsin, I've been even out to L.A. I was in L.A. maybe about Long Beach about 3 weeks ago. I was out there speaking at a corrections a leadership conference.
Okay.
So yeah, it's been building, man. But yeah, in Wisconsin, I go back into the prison all the time and talk to the guys and some of the guys I was in there with, because I haven't been gone for 20 years. I've been gone for 5.
Right.
So when I go back in there, it's still people there. Yeah, you know. Yeah,
you still ain't making your bed.
That's right. Exactly.
Not much has changed.
Yeah. And some guys, you go back in there, they went home before you did, and you go back in there and speak and you see them.
Right.
And you know, they like, and you're like, yeah, man, what you doing?
Right.
You know, so, yeah, you go in there and it's a whole different feeling for me. When I go in there, I feel like a Martin, you know, or Malcolm when I go in there, because, you know, you are the number one speaker in the world when you're in front of your audience.
That's a fact. I like that.
You know, it's like, do the good speaker, do the good speaker.
Expound on what you just now said, because that's something that's important.
Yeah, when you're in front of your people, you are the best in the world at it. Nobody can go. I feel like this. Nobody can walk into any jail or prison or juvenile facility in America and outspeak me, because I've lived that experience. I know the stench. I know the emotion. I know you finna walk out here with this pain on your sleeve. You know, you're going to mask it. You're going to try to make it look different. But only me and you know this. And if you haven't lived it, you're not going to be able to connect with the audience the way I am. Not to say you can't. But when I go in there, I'm gonna be able to say, I know what you're thinking, bro. I know what you about to do. I can see it.
Yeah.
I can anticipate everything that's going on in the room. Whereas somebody that haven't lived it, they probably won't know as much as I would have that experience. Like, say, would a doctor. If you're in a room full of doctors and the doctor is giving a speech, he's gonna be able to relate to that room full of doctors like I can't.
Right.
You know, I might come in there and say some motivation and talk about my past and my experience, but that doctor going to go in there and say some things that I just don't even know what he's talking
facts,
about.
Facts, facts.
So that's how I kind of rolls, man. Get in front of your audience and do your thing.
That's real. And what's your overarching message to the brothers when you're in the prison systems? Like, what are you trying to leave them with?
I'm always trying to leave them with some belief in themselves. That's the most powerful thing I feel a person can have, is confidence. There's some talented people. Prison has a lot of intelligent people, but they're lacking in confidence. They're lacking in the belief in themselves. So the more I can say, look, believe in yourself. You can do it. The only reason why you're not doing it is because you don't believe. So I have to tell them things that make them believe, like look in that mirror and believe in yourself. Because there's some people out here that's not as talented as you, that's not as smart as you, and they killing the game. So you can't say, I don't have the talent. You can't say I don't have the intelligence. It's you don't have the confidence.
No doubt. No doubt. Man, I love to hear these stories, man. It's super dope coming where you came from to be able to, you know, speak on this platform and many other platforms, no, you know, to an audience. Like you said, you're the number one speaker in this audience. Yeah. And there's plenty of brothers and sisters that need to hear this message today. So, man, dope. I really appreciate it. We've been rocking for a minute. So we're going to start kind of wrapping up. Before we go, we always got to get kind of the final thought, which is just whatever you want to leave the people with, whether it's entrepreneurial, spiritual, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then let everybody know where they can connect with you and learn more. You said you're also putting together some courses and curriculum.
Yes.
For furniture delivery, last mile. So kind of talk about that, and then we'll kind of wrap it up.
Okay. First of all, before I forget, I'm Ed Hennings One on Instagram. That's the main platform right now. So y'all check me out. Not only that, but the video, stay tuned in. That should be dropping any day now. So you guys will be able to see that. In its entirety, it's really put a lot of time and work into it. I work with some guys out of Dallas, and we really put it down, man. So be looking forward to that to really help the people out that's trying to get into this game. But what's very important to the trucking business and any business, once again, is personal self-development, because there's a lot of information out here. There's a lot of knowledge out here. And I thank you guys at Truck and Hustle for delivering like that, because it's a lot of knowledge and a lot of information that you guys bring to the table. But if you're not right as a person, if you're not where you need to be as a person, you won't be able to execute that plan. You won't be able to utilize that information, because you're not where you need to be, because there's no shortage, especially on social media. There's no shortage of information. You can go on social media and find anything you want to find, whether stocks, whether it's real estate, trucking, boxing, anything you want to find is on the internet, right?
Facts.
But you can't execute it. You can't execute the same information that you and I get every day and put out there every day. You can't take it and use it, because it's not the lack of information, it's you. So the final thing is there's no failure. There's no such thing as failure. There's quitters. Because anybody that fixed their mindset to say, I'm willing to put in the work and put in the time, you can't fail. If you're willing to put in that work and work as long as it takes for you to get there, you eventually gonna arrive to where you want to be in life. But if you're not willing to put in the time, and even people start out working, but it don't come fast enough, so they quit. So it's no such thing as failure. It's just quitters.
No doubt. I love that. If you can't respect that, your whole perspective is whack. Hustle fam, this has been dope. Ed, I appreciate you, man, for tapping in with me today. Definitely an enlightening conversation. I look forward to seeing your business grow and seeing you grow just as a speaker and as the just the man you are. You know what I mean? Where you've come from. I respect you and I appreciate it, brother. Thank you,
man,
so much.
Thanks for having me, bro.
Hustle fam, you know what we do around this time. If you smell something burning, it's only your desire. Myself, Ed, we out.
If you twisted, confused, or stuck about trucks, don't be dumb. This is the place to come. Truck and Hustle. Let's go.